Hey, everyone. We want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all-over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Hello there, and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm Adam Russell.
Hey guys, I'm Ryan Key, and I'm unmuted.
Hey, hello my friends, it's Mike Forrester, and we have a show for you about princesses, scoundrels, and child abduction. Oh, what a show. What a show you're about to see. We probably just got flagged for that on YouTube, so I apologize for that.
I'm here to tell you the truth about child labor laws. They're silly and outdated.
You can't say child abduction on YouTube.
That's true.
Definitely not.
Then let's get right into the discussion about how this is full-blown Nazi Third Reich stuff.
Yeah.
This is probably one of my favorite jokes from Role Models, when they're like, ooh, come on, tell us a spooky story. And he's like, oh, I've got a scary story, and it's even scarier because it's true every day. Children are abducted. And he's like, okay, that's enough. That's great. Our patrons are here tonight. Our YouTubers are here tonight. Everyone's fired up about two incredible episodes of this children's show, which left me at about 5 a.m. going, I don't feel better about anything.
No. The state of the world, not great. The state of our heroes, not great. Children's cartoons making us feel the full weight of impending doom.
Nothing is safe. Nothing is safe.
No, man. I mean, one thing after another, but CX sniping that trooper, the gunship pilot, just to crash Hunter?
Right.
Like, yeah. What?
Could have very easily, like, they were in communication. Like, another trooper was like, hey, I think they're getting away. And he was like, ah, right. Yes. Rather than be like, hey, you should probably crash the ship or at least bring him over here. He was just like, let's just get this over with and let's shoot him. Lots to talk about in this episode, with an S. But we have to talk about, most importantly, what the people come here to this YouTube show to see, which is our bingo results.
Oh, yeah.
That
crushing.
I think we're going to get to later. But I think it was fun that we have now, like, people are invested in these bingo cards, and I think it's fantastic.
I still won the poll. I won the poll.
Ryan is doing, are you, Ryan, you're our resident sports ball guy. Are you doing okay in March Madness outside of this bingo extravaganza we have here for Bad Batch?
I didn't do it this year. I had the opportunity to join my brother-in-law's brackets, and I was day of.
Sure.
Like, day of first games, sure. And the app was freaking out on me. I kept getting some weird error message.
Okay.
And I just wasn't able to enter. I don't know if I was too late or what, but anyways, so no, I'm doing great, March Madness, because I'm not playing.
I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
Did you have an idea of who was going to win, at least, at the beginning of this? I think I'm more invested in the women's bracket at this point than I am in the men's.
No, but I haven't been following, because basketball is not my sport, but I did watch number one North Carolina go down, which was pretty wild. I watched that live.
Sure.
Dude, I'm not making a joke right now. Thank you for clarifying that we're talking about basketball, because I did not know.
Yes.
I'm number one North Carolina, because I won the poll. So I went into the tourney ranked number one.
Right.
And I'm getting...
Yeah, come on and raise up.
I'm getting knocked
Take
off.
Take your shirt off.
I'm getting knocked off.
Wrap it around your hand, spin it like a helicopter.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm just trying to pick you up, Ryan. You know, the bingo card for season 3 of Bad Batch has been a little rough on you, so I'm just trying to keep being here. You know what I mean? You know, we love you, buddy.
Dude, if it makes you feel any better, I have one hit. One.
It's a good hit, though.
One square.
It was a solid, it was solid contact. It was like CX hitting that guy right in the chest.
I'm going to get No Monster of the Week. I'm going to get that one.
I agree.
Here's the thing. People do not agree with our assessment of that episode. Ultimately, we make the rules so we can market however we want.
That is absolutely wrong.
Yeah.
They think it was Monsters. They thought last week's was Monster of the Week?
No, no. The week before last when I wasn't on.
I see.
Because when we talk about Monster of the Week, we're talking about, it's a term of endearment to to label an episode that is off the main storyline.
Yes.
That doesn't mean an episode with a monster in it. Could you call it Adventure of the Week? Maybe that's what we should have called it.
I think
instead
we did.
Of monster, because there no, it says Monster of the Week on the card. But yes, there was a monster in the episode, but it was still, they were fighting the monster on their way to the end of this story.
In service of the story.
To push the plot forward.
Yes. Yeah. They weren't on some side hustle for Sid that had nothing to do with cloning. It was fully in the storyline.
Yeah.
So it was Mandalorian style, like, you want the next part of the story? Do this job.
I'm heated.
So
I'm getting that one, okay?
We'll
love it. Yes! Yes!
When we do the season wrap-up and we go through and debate all this stuff and explain and declare our own scores as judge, jury, and executioner of our own game, we'll recap and we'll fully clarify what each of these things
mean. That's a good segue. That's a good
judge,
segue.
Jury, and executioner.
Because you know who's judge, jury, and executioner is the Empire.
Nailed it.
Hemlock.
Fully on display in episodes 10 and 11.
Let's go ahead and execute some of these kids.
Yeah, so like I said a little bit earlier, the Empire is like more than ever in full Third Reich final solution mode. And the thing that like really makes me think that more than the other times when we've talked about this is how like already we are 1 year out from Order 66 and like everyone all across the galaxy is so brainwashed into thinking, yep, the Jedi are the enemies. We need to turn them in. It's full people living in fear, turning in Jewish people during World War II fully.
Yeah.
And it's like gross and scary and in this kids cartoon.
I just finished, I think, Ryan, we haven't talked about it, so I assume that you're not finished, or maybe you did, but I finished Masters of the Air, and then of course all geeked up on my historical series on HBO. I just finished my fourth rewatch of Band of Brothers. I mean, it's incredible, right? But the second, fourth, fifth time watching it, when the town, I can't remember the town that was in Germany, when the town didn't even realize that there was a work camp to the extent of what happening, even in their own town, right? And so there's that very harrowing scene where, you know, they go back into town and they go, all these people are going to help us get bodies out of here, right? And and I've said this before on this podcast, and I've you know, even our own American history, if the powers that be do not want you to remember something, they will do what they can to make sure that, like, you have to really work for it. And if you look at, even in history, the Weather Underground, which a lot of people don't know, in the 1960s, the SDS, there was literally homegrown college-age terrorism right here in Chicago and all over the country. And a lot of people have never heard about that because, for a very specific reason, they didn't want to give people ideas. But it goes to show you that at the time, there's a ton of people who had no idea. So much history that goes on and information that doesn't get out. So when people go, well, how come after Order 66, like, no one's heard of the Jedi? And you're like, if you control all of the information, you can absolutely make sure that people don't ask too many
questions.
State
media.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it's an incredible display of our own history that once again is the George Lucas vision of going, I'm just basically retelling stories that have affected me, affected my friends, affected this country. And it's, I think, exactly the way that we were supposed to feel is what we felt from these episodes. So on that note.
Yeah, man. On that rosy, shiny, rainbow-filled, smiley note, as predicted, Cad Bane is the Class 1 bounty hunter. We figured it was him. I mean, top of the list. It could be some others, but he's the guy. Emery Carr promoted to chief scientist, taking Nalase's place. She wanted that position. That gets hairy for her pretty quickly. She starts to see some things that she has to wrestle with. Empire occupies Pabu, Rest in peace, Havoc Marauder.
Oof.
The Bad Batch essentially defeated at the end of this episode. Omega captured on her way back to Tantus. It's like full-blown The Empire Strikes Back ending level. Ryan, along with the feelings that you're already talking about, you mentioned the score in the chat.
Mm.
Haunting, huh?
Yeah, this is just the... I talk about this all the time when the last four episodes of Clone Wars took just all of a sudden this like dark synth wave turn in the score that really hadn't been there in all, you know, in all the seasons of the show up to that point. And it's like it's like the Kiner's signature sound when things are going poorly for yeah. the heroes or when sad, dark things are happening. And it's like they really bail on the orchestral elements and they just lean into this dark brooding synth pulse.
Yeah.
Oh, and they do.
And the pace just like grinds to a halt too. It's just like yeah. droning.
Yeah.
Like I listened to it today. I watched and then I was trying to get a bunch of stuff done in the house. So I tried to put on the score and just get in like work mode, you know? So I put on even season two and about 2-3 tracks in, I was like, no, this is not the energy vibe I was looking for. I had to put on A New Hope, you know?
Why am I even yeah. cleaning this? This is yeah. horrible.
Yeah, I was really stoked on the music for both of these episodes just because I think when they're actually at their best when they do this style, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a unique sound for Star Wars that only they do and only in these situations. And so it's such a signature thing for animation and for their scores. So yeah, I loved the dark, just sad vibes.
The dark electronic sad.
Yeah.
I'm an emo dad.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
but
good.
But it's also it's their own thing, but it's also unmistakably Star Wars. Maybe because, you know, they did it in the final season of the Clone Wars leaning this direction.
Right.
And there are six seasons of precedent that Kevin and his adult children kind of transitioned from the Lucas thing into their own version of the Lucas thing.
Right.
So there's nothing about it that I'm listening that makes me think, oh, that's not Star Wars. It just is. It's just right. a different shade, a different tone of Star Wars. And
right.
I love it. I love it so much. All right. We've got a handful of things in Stolen Plans that we need to get to, some fun cast stuff. So we're going to get right into that right now.
What have you done with those plans?
All right, The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episodes 10 and 11, Identity Crisis and Point of No Return, debuted today, April 3rd, 2024 on Disney+. Identity Crisis, the Disney+ description, is Emery confronts the dark secrets behind Hemlock's scientific research. And man...
Does she ever.
Just they're just keeping kids in cells, man.
Yeah.
Anyways, runtime 25 minutes, directed by Saul Ruiz, written by Amanda Rose Munoz. And now we're on to Point of No Return. Disney Plus description is The Empire closes in on the batch. We're Matt's back, or Mark is back, whatever
Mark the intern's
name is. The Empire closes in on the batch. Thanks, Mark.
We did it.
Runtime 23 minutes, directed by Nate Villanueva. Written by Amanda Rose Munoz again. Also, she wrote both of these episodes. Way to go. Good on you, Amanda.
Has she been a reoccurring writer on yeah. Bad Batch as a whole?
For sure. Yeah. They seem to have a tight crew.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's, I guess it's obvious having the two episode release. It's really because it's supposed to be one episode.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think we went over this a little bit earlier this season, how this is the way they're getting around the 20-minute format, the 25-minute yeah. format, right? So so it's really like she wrote almost an hour-long episode, which is super, super sick and well done. All right, starring Yvonne Sinitsyn as SP-32, Jax, only his third role ever. Olwen M. Whelan as SP-54, Eva. I wonder if it's Eva or Ava. Eva?
Makes sense.
It's the only role listed on IMDb.
I can't tell what's the real pronunciation when a Kiwi says it. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Ava.
I think it would be Ava.
Thank the yeah. Maker, an American podcast.
It's kind of a hybrid of both. Star Wars voice acting veteran Shelby Young voices both yep. the mother and the Force-sensitive baby in the opening scene. That is very cool, voicing, like being able to voice a literal baby.
Yeah.
And it sounded like a baby creature. Like it wasn't Like, we could make stupid noises and sound like a baby, but that sounded legit. Like,
she's great.
How did they find a baby?
To make following her on Instagram is probably like one of the most entertaining accounts I have, just because I'm like, she does stuff and I can't tell if she's messing with me, like as a viewer. Like, she's like, hey, did I say this or did someone else say it? And I'm like, what?
She'll do like 10 characters in 30 seconds, that kind of stuff.
Or recently, like her talking with her mouth closed just for like an effect. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know humans could do that, but here we go.
The mother is Ailish and the Force-sensitive baby is Bairn, as well as the nanny droid. Shelby is most notably the voice of Princess Leia in Forces of Destiny and Lego Star Wars. Very cool. Steve Bloom, the voice of Zeb Aurelius in Rebels, our boy Zeb, voices a stormtrooper and a villager. Andy Allo and Liana Hazard and Miss Gaia. Andy played Nora in the Amazon series Upload. That's a great show. Have you seen it?
No. Is it awesome?
I started it. I didn't finish it, but I started it and it was really fun. I mean, it was a fun, like really funny show.
It is really fun, but dude, the deeper you get into it, it gets so laughably bizarre. Like, I don't want to talk shit on it because it is a really fun show.
I only saw like the first half of the first season and I thought it was good.
Yeah, same. And then it gets to the point where you're like, oh, you just want to do this with the story and the character, regardless of whether this makes any sense at all or whether there's any motivation for this or this. Like, oh, this character has this personality now. But it is fun and funny. So it's, you know, it's the main, what do they call that? The person in the cubicle that comes into the upload and is their assistant. You know, it's her who falls in love with the main dude. Nora, the main.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's her.
Nora on the show, on the Amazon show.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, back to Star Wars. Daniel Logan returns as Mox, one of the clone kids on Pabu. And have we ever mentioned that Keisha Castle Hughes, the voice of Emery Carr, played Queen Apeliana in Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah.
So that's the second Queen of Naboo after Padme.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's got like the very geisha looking white makeup with like a white and blue headdress with the beads dangling.
Yes.
Like if you saw the picture, you know immediately.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, that's her.
Huh. That's fun.
I don't know why we never connected that.
I've got to imagine that Daniel Logan has he's got one closet in his house with a microphone that just sits there and just says, turn on when Star Wars calls. I don't know what else the dude is doing other than going to cons as Boba Fett from something from, you know, 20 years ago. But it's rad that they bring him back to do stuff like this. This cracks me up. But, you know, it's like, hey, we brought Daniel Logan and he's the guy, the kid. You're like,
yeah.
I'm available for a call if you need someone. We're around.
Mike also has a phone that says Star Wars is calling.
Star Wars is calling. I need to answer this real quick. I'll be back in a second.
So do you mind? I have to take this one. I have to take this call.
Totally cool. Yeah. Totally cool. You are important. And then look at this next one. This is neat.
Speaking of bringing people back, Matt Lanter, the voice of Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars. You might know the guy.
Oh, that old guy?
You might know him. The guy behind the guy voices a stormtrooper and Ollie, the service droid at the port where Fee is refueling her ship. That'll be 1,600 credits. I think she handed him $2,000. I think she handed him $2,000 and was like,
yeah, keep the change.
Yeah. It was a nice, easy handoff. And like, what would she have handed him? 1,800 and said, keep the change? No, she just gave him two G-bills, you know?
But what a flex for Matt Lanter. Like, I wonder if he was calling and he's like, guys, I'm like open this week. Like, get me in on something. Come on, man. I'm bored.
They're like, you can be a stormtrooper.
Need me to come back and sky guy that thing? They're like,
he's like, I'm not Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Dude, it's, I would guess it's not so different from like, Ryan, you've probably had times where like you visit a friend in the studio or something and it's like, yo, you want to do some harmonies on this thing real quick and just not even get credited just for fun, just throw it in there. I bet that happens all the time with stuff like this.
In music, what is the best example of that that you guys can think of?
Bert from The Used screams the last couple lines in Anthem of Our Dying Day on our first album because he was just at Feldman's house. And Dan was like a hardcore dude.
Sure.
You know, pop punk dude until that first album. Hadn't ever screamed until we made him scream on the album.
Nice.
And Feldman's like, I don't know, like a little grosser. Like, Bert, you want to do this? And he just did it. Uncredited.
I like details like that.
Natalie Maines.
Sure.
The Chicks now.
Yeah, sure.
They were making an album next door to us. And we said, do you want to sing on this song? And she said, sure. Can we make it like a full duet? And then now there's just a song where I'm just singing with Natalie Maines on a record.
Formerly of Dixie, now just of Chicks.
Absolutely wild. Still, to this day, it's just wild that that is a thing that happened.
And that's how it happened.
I'm not even 1% a country fan, but I love and respect that group.
Dude, taking the long way, that the record that they were making with Rick Rubin next door to us, that record slaps. Really does.
That's funny.
They, I was like, what if I just asked if she would sing on it?
Did you knock on the door?
And everyone was like, all you can do is ask. Well, we were all out in like the courtyard at the studio the time.
All right.
We had already hung out and had coffee and met them. And there was kind of a common area, you know?
Right.
And so one day I got up the courage to say,
mustered it up.
Hey. And she was like, I would love to. And there we go.
Sick.
I just imagine you like looking through this like small little window and being like, hey, hi, it's me.
Hi.
Next door. Just got a little idea.
It was wild. Being next to them making that record. We're totally off topic. I'm stolen plans. I'm going to finish. I've got
this
one
is what
more
people
to go
are here for, though. I mean,
but Rick Rubin was producing the album. Rick Rubin was there all the time.
Right.
Just right next door to him. He was just walking around.
Beard hairs everywhere in your food, getting cut in the faders.
Chad from the Chili Peppers played drums on that record. So he was there every day.
Right.
Will Ferrell. Crazy.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. See, this is why people like this podcast, because this is going to be probably.
It's Stolen Plans.
It is Stolen Plans. Yeah. And also, it's going to be on Galactic Punk News tomorrow. You know what I mean? So this is going to be good.
Great.
All right. Star Wars. Here we are.
Lastly, in Stolen Plans, Michelle Ang, Gwendolyn Yao, and Seth Green, in addition to their roles as Omega, Nala Se and Toto 360, they also voice three of the villagers.
Why not?
They're there. They're in front of the mic.
Why not?
Seth Green loves that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to hang with that guy.
Oh, to be in a Star War.
Yep.
One day.
Hey, everyone. We want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all-over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts. They do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
All right, let's discuss some stuff. Clonex says, I tracked down the Trandoshan. That's Sid, obviously.
Do I get a point?
Probably dead, man. I hope we find out, but it's not looking good.
Well, I'm getting that point, baby.
Guy sniped one of his own troopers. She did.
Well, that's
she did.
Bring to Discord to see. Yeah.
Yeah. Emery, this is by far the most screen time for Emery. This was like an episode, I'm trying to think of another example where like, you know, I guess the Book of Boba Fett, where it's all the Mandalorian. It's hardly any Bad Batch, mostly Emery and the stuff in Tantus. The interesting thing about her character and her arc is it's like a condensed version of all the clone trooper arcs, you know, going all the clones, period, you know, going all the way back to Attack of the Clones when the Kaminoans were talking about how they're perfectly trained, perfectly obedient from birth. And then here we are. 7 seasons of Clone Wars and 2 seasons of The Bad Batch later, they've all got their own personalities, they're questioning orders, they're building an uprising, you know? So we don't get it as like definitively here, but it seems apparent that she's got compassion for the children. She gives Omega's homemade Lula to the little girl. You know, she's asking a lot of questions that make it apparent she's uneasy about what's going on. And Cad Bane actually says something awesome that really locks it in to me.
What does he say?
She's asking all these questions of him, and he says something like,
no, not supposed to ask questions like that.
Your questions reveal more than you want them to, or something
right.
like that.
Yeah, he says, it was something like, yeah, you ask, your questions like that reveal more than you know.
Yeah.
Right. Or something like that.
Right. Yeah, like revealing things about what your character and what you think about the situation. And to me, that calls straight back to Din Djarin originally asking the client what's going to happen to the baby. And he's like, you know, that's not the way we do this, right?
Well, he's just like, he's like, that's so unlike your kind to care, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I like that we got this follow-up for Emery. I would say this episode, Ryan, back me up on this. Adam, I think you're actually watching it. This was like a Gil episode in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean?
I'm in season 3.
Oh, you're not there yet. Okay. I didn't say anything. But it's kind of one of those episodes where you're seeing how the main bad guy is almost like how these operations are actually happening. Like the, you know, kind of how how it's made. But we had seen Emery's, I would say if we call it a deviance or if we would call it a kind of her sidetrackness, her humanity showing when she comes back and obviously tells Omega, hey, you can't have that. You're not supposed to have that right before Omega gets broken out. She comes back and kind of, you know, she's been showing her empathy the whole time. So I'm glad that we got to see where this followed up because we also remember that Emery was the one that basically is the reason Nala stays in containment. So there's a lot. Emery has become a very interesting character that I think we were expecting, but maybe not to this level. But it's pretty clear she's...
I love it.
She's crucial.
Crush. It's pronounced Crush.
Crush.
Speaking of, when was she cloned? Like, it's easy to infer that because of her age and being like a direct clone of Jango Fett, she has to have the accelerated aging thing like the rest of the clones because there hasn't been enough time.
Right.
You know, Bobo was cloned really early, it seems like, in the process, and he's still a kid. She's a full-blown adult.
Right.
Is the math the same for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would say, yeah,
because it's never been explicitly said. I was just thinking about it today.
It's certainly murky, and I'm sure if you put together a timeline to the T, it probably wouldn't make... I don't know if it would make perfect sense. But I've got the sense that Emery is on the same trajectory as most of the inline clones
right.
as regards to their rapid aging and their advancement. So, I mean, I don't know, until we find something else out about it. But there's multiple scientists besides her, which I think is interesting. So, like, at what point did they introduce them all at once or where is the rest of them? It's very, because when you look up and you see that observation deck, like there's a ton of people up in there. Right. And I'm like, ooh, this is interesting, but we'll get into that. So
it's like,
operation
gives the vibe of like an operational, an operation theater from at like the turn of the century when surgeons were like, just experimenting on
right.
You know, what happens if I cut this open
or
stick this into that. Oh, organ,
we need
a new
one in here because that
and everybody was just watching, you know.
Right.
So weird.
And two, like I also got, I don't know if anyone watched the latest Stranger Things, but I certainly got, you know, Eleven and Papa and
Yes.
Yeah, I got a lot of that vibe. And we've seen that before too. It almost has the Apple TV, what's that amazing show? Where you get Ben Stiller's with Adam and
Severance.
I got some vibes from that of like
what a show
it's supposed to be, you know? Yeah, exactly. Coming back season 2.
Yeah, there definitely is that like Eleven and Papa vibe with Hemlock,
right?
Like Emery's just been brainwashed her whole life, and it's finally starting to unravel,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
It's good. All right, let's talk about the real stuff. Not that stuff isn't real, but the Omega M count question. Hemlock gives Emery a full exposition dump, and it's done well enough. Like, okay, now that this is your job title, I'm bringing you in. You're going to come in the vault. I need to bring you up to speed. Here's the quote. He lays it out. He says, as you know, M count cannot be directly replicated from the source. However, Nala Se knew of another way, which is why she aided in Omega's escape. The young clone's blood was the only binder proven to be compatible with their DNA to recreate their M count levels. And why Omega must be found.
Hmm.
So there it is, straight up. That it doesn't give us clarity whether or not she has force sensitivity, but we know that it's all the samples as they're spinning in that clock thing. They're dropping in drops of blood from the kids, the specimens
right.
in holding. It's not Palpatine's blood.
Right.
So do you think that you think there was a powwow with JJ? That was like, so what were you? What were you thinking?
Dude, or more on this later.
Or do you think it really was just
somehow?
We don't know.
The M count has returned.
And this is all being written to you know, explain that moment away. That's just, it's so crazy to think about because
dude, there's a thing in the den later that gets directly into this and we should talk and we'll be speaking in all caps. I'll just say that.
I cannot wait to hear about it.
But I think that for us to know that, you know, I mean, we see this all the way going back to Lucas's thing, right? That Qui-Gon quite literally pricks Anakin and does a test and then gets a reading, right? So this whole, like, the blood being this indicator that's, you know, very, that's very real world in that regard. I mean, we've seen this in the prequels, right? So this was long before J.J. Abrams and everyone getting, you know, confused as to where this concept came from. This is all the way from Big George himself. Mm-hmm. So I think the clarity on it was interesting. And I think it's kind of one of those things where we've never thought too hard about until finally something brings us to think this macro about how these things come about. But when we think about it, it's like, you know, how interested are they again, Ryan, to your point, we're going to get into it later, but it's like, you know, was this a sequel inspiration or was this actually a prequel inspiration of how we came to be with this? So it's interesting regardless, but obviously the Jedi knowing that the midichlorian count can be available through blood is a long-standing Star Wars thing at this point. So I think we're on it.
I love when Cad Bane checks the blood of the little cat baby, reads the thing and goes, That'll do.
Cad Bane also, let me just note this. When he gets his toothpick, there is a mechanical sound. So if you're wondering if automatic toothpick dispensers are canon, congratulations. That should have been on my bingo card because that would have been a point for me. Turns out you can shop a shopper image if you want, even in space.
I mean, why get one out manually when you can have it dispensed mechanically? You know what I mean?
Pull it out and just chew on it. Toto, get your chassis up here.
Star Wars tech is just the stuff that really matters.
Yeah, it's true.
There's no internet, but there's mechanical toothpick dispensers.
I want to watch him take his gross hands and put it under an automatic soap dispenser, like just to let people know. These things can exist. We have repulsor lifts. Why can't we have an automatic toothpick dispenser? We're good.
Dude, you know what it's like? It's like the stuff you find in electronic shops in Japan.
Yeah, sure.
Stuff that, like, as a kid, you're like, wouldn't it be sick if this existed? Turns out it does.
It does.
In Japan already. Some weird little thing has been made that...
Turns out slick shoes do exist.
It doesn't really solve a problem that wasn't really that big of an issue, but in case you were one of those people, absolutely.
So I feel like it's still a 50-50 shot whether or not Omega's force sensitive. I mean, there's the last shot of the episode.
Yes.
She's meditating in the Clone X's ship on the way to
Tantus. But then her eyes open.
Yeah. And it's like, is she just meditating because Gunji taught her and she's just trying to, you know, practice mindfulness? Or is she trying? Like, is she really trying based on her experience with Ventress?
I read it as she was doing it because Gunji taught her and then something clicked. She made a connection or she sensed something and that threw her out of it.
There's been an awakening.
Yes.
Darth Vader's eyes open. He's in the back to tank.
Yeah. Yeah. It almost like...
Just like an Obi-Wan.
It scared her out of the meditation.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, I like that.
Sick.
That's what I took from that scene.
Sick.
That she actually did finally link up with the Force.
God, I hope. I know it's so on the nose, but I want it so bad. I know you do too. We want it. Give it to
us. Yeah, dude, come on.
All of a sudden on Tatooine, we heard Kenobi.
Yeah,
this whole storyline is on the nose to explain somehow Palpatine returned, and we're here for it. So just give us what
they want. They gave us three seasons of animated Star Wars just because of that line. They were like, "We heard you."
It's not like she's gonna, you know, as we've seen in certain future films, just pick up a lightsaber and rip out of nowhere. I don't think we're gonna get that. I just think there might be a moment before this is over where, you know, she realizes that she's one with the Force.
Yeah, flows through everything. All right. Who or what is in the big mysterious chamber at the center of the lab?
Oh.
We had one other shot when we first saw this lab. Same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Opens, light hits Hemlock's face. There is something interesting here.
Okay, here we go. Let's get into it.
You know what? We'll show this in the den.
Oh, okay.
Because you need to, Mike, you and I You want to do it now, or you want to do it in the den? We've got screenshots.
Ah, bring it up. We're talking about it. Let's bring it up.
All right.
This is what YouTube and this is what the Discord, this is what the patrons want to see. They want to see these class presentations here.
So on Hemlock's desk, on his data pad, this is the first one he's looking at. It looks like the Clone X helmet and the mask, you know? It looks pretty close, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's the earpieces look like the circles that light up, which yep. mm-hmm. I love. It's such a sick tool they use to identify them in the dark or wherever, you know, in any scene. You're like, oh, that's Clone X right there.
Right.
It's got that cat-like mouth, kind of almost Black Panther style.
Which is actually a scout trooper respirator.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the next one, so he taps a button to go to the next slide.
Oh, boy.
And look at this thing.
Oh, boy, here we go.
It's got this helmet that's almost like, it has these earpieces that are almost like Hu Yang's helmet a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And the body mm-hmm. is almost Iron Man-esque. It's bigger. It's a little more robust.
That is definitely a Decepticon.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of parallels being drawn to Phase 1 Dark Trooper.
Yes.
Which I think that's what the internet has, that's currently in favor. And as you look more at it, there's certainly, and I think, mainly because of the sides of the Phase 1 Dark Trooper had almost these like they were like their respirators, or they had, you know, breathers on the side. What's interesting about this is we can't make out any Arbesh in it, so it doesn't have any. It's like I can't see what exactly is on the side there, but I think they did it for a very specific reason and not include anything legible because of nerds like us.
Right.
But what's interesting about this too,
we'll ruin it for everyone. Here,
you're exactly right, is that this part, this looks like the Amban pulse rifle.
Yeah, to the right of it. So on the other slide, on the right, there's just like the almost like Da Vinci style.
Schematics, yeah.
You know, arms down. This one has a separate, for everyone listening, has a separate thing to the right. What looks like a piece of a weapon that is the tip of Mike. Go ahead.
Woo, 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 woo. What's interesting about this, so this kind of feeds further into our, I don't want to speculate, but I think if there's enough here for us to look at it, is that, you know, we know that Moff Gideon was incredibly inspired and incredibly curious about Mandalorian culture. We know that for him to be able to harvest Beskar, for him to understand all of the things that made Mandalorians such fierce warriors, and it being obviously a huge part. Moff Gideon knows that Grogu is being protected by Din Djarin. They spar in the first episode, they spar in the first season. And what's most interesting about that, I think, is that we've gotten to that point where we could definitely introduce Moff Gideon at this point.
Yeah.
And possibly see why they are so inspired. We haven't seen a lot of Mandalorian representation in this series so far. And we know that that's obviously an important point, considering the last time that we saw live action cloning was in season 2 of The Mandalorian in the Remnant Imperial Outpost. So something else to see.
You're just trying to hit bingo card. Spots in your head right now.
Dude, let's do it. Look at this weapon on the right, though.
You're manifesting.
That's the tip of the Amban rifle.
Yep.
Almost like a tuning fork type thing.
Right.
But it's just a staff handle. It's cut off a little bit. You know, the bottom of it's cut off in the shot, but it looks like the same thing. Like
right.
They don't do this by accident. They don't just draw something and go, that looks cool.
Right.
You know?
They put that there for a reason.
Yeah.
Most
I'm about it.
Interesting.
So Moff Gideon says the first generation was flawed because it had a human in it. The human wasn't enough. They did the droids. Or did he say the other way? They did the droid version, and the downfall was that there wasn't someone in it, and the, right. you know, the missing ingredient was him.
Right.
Either way, he's talking about iteration.
The missing ingredient is a Force-sensitive being in the suit.
Yeah.
Right. Who can power the suit, have the power to be able to tap into it. Yeah.
Well, that has like so many levels, because the suit could be more powerful, because it could be more heavy,
mm-hmm.
because you would be able to manipulate the weight of it with the Force, or, you know, just you'd be like an indestructible warrior that could.
Right.
I mean, scary stuff to think about.
Yeah.
Getting in the wrong hands, you know?
Iron Man style. All right. I'm happy about that. I like that that's there.
Mike, have you seen the thing speaking of Iron Man, where it talks about like, it's like a meme on the internet where it says, my kid can't tie their shoes or clean up their dishes or put their toys away or whatever. But then it goes, the second they get a tablet, and it cuts to Robert Downey Jr. like
with Jarvis
throwing all the Jarvis stuff all over the room. And then the last shot is him when he goes and like pushes back from his chair.
It's so true. Good. It's true. My kid is a technological wizard. Yet if I was like, hey, could you zip up your coat? She's like, are you sure? What? How am I supposed to do that? I'm like, okay, that's fine. But she can navigate the entire Netflix catalog, and that's good.
So, she goes,
I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
Yeah. Exactly correct.
For over 1,000 generations.
It is the Darksaber.
Run, to gosh.
It's a Kalikori.
A Sith wayfinder.
Dark science. Cloning. Secrets only the Sith knew.
The Den of Antiquities. It's good. It's deep today. We got two episodes worth of Den of Antiquities. And I think this is an important part for us to talk about. We're not speculating, but there's definitely enough in here that we should comment on. But let's first get into it. The cat marsupial type of series, species of the force-sensitive toddler in the opening scene of the episode 11, which was both voiced by Shelby Young, has yet to be named, but was previously seen in Solo, a Star Wars story when they are in the, I think it's in the smugglers, the betting den, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, which was a treasure trove of different species done incredibly well. The baby's name is Barn, which is Ryan from Screen Crush claims is Scottish for baby. Can't verify that. We don't know that for sure. But you know what? I like it. Let's just say, got a shout out to Screen Crush. Let's just say
I can find out. I have a good Scottish friend.
Let's follow up on that.
I'll find out. We'll follow up next week.
Let's follow up. Let's figure it out.
Do it.
The four sensitive children in Mount Tantus wear the same jumpsuits as the adult prisoners there. So
dark.
This is somewhere out there. There's a seamstress that's like, you need it in what size? But they don't ask because the Empire pays. Force-sensitive green-screen Mirrorland boy from Mount Tantus is named Jax, which reminds me of Jackson, the green rabbit character in the 1977 Marvel Comics series. Star Wars number 8, which George Lucas hated, by the way, and motivated him to insist on creative control of all new EU material from then on. And if you're curious as to what Jackson is actually well, first of all, they made a black series of him, but think of a X-Wing pilot. But if the X-Wing pilot was in a red jumpsuit and also was an Easter Bunny.
Straight up Bugs Bunny, a green Bugs Bunny.
Straight up. It's a straight up Bugs Bunny. There is nothing that makes sense about it. But there is one cosplayer that does do a Jackson, and that's fantastic when you see him at Celebration. So George Lucas, in typical fashion, I'm too busy to do something. Someone else takes it. And then he goes, nope, not like that. Not like that.
I get it.
I actually think I have one of the comics here. Sorry, I got a little hot.
Creative people, I mean, not me. I would never. But creative people like to do that. Right. What you just said.
Next week, I will unveil my new Yellow Card song. You're going to love it. Tarkin's criticism of Hemlock's use of funds is a pattern. He did the same to Krennic with Project Stardust, which is the Death Star in Rogue One. And there was also conflict over clones versus conscripted soldiers in season one of The Bad Batch. So Tarkin, the interesting part about this is if Tarkin, I mean, I'm sure not a lot of people tell Grand Moff Tarkin it's classified, which honestly is a huge flex on Hemlock's
huge
side,
flex, right? Dude.
Because you can see him go, okay, that's fine. I'm a military man myself. I understand I might be, if you're going to use that word, I have to respect it. But he's also like, I could defund you and figure out exactly what you've been doing here, which is also a very Tarkin move. But I think that's kind of goes to show you that Tarkin is the tax man in many ways. Mm-hmm. So
what Hemlock dropped the ball on, perfect opportunity. He should have said, that's classified. I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Nice.
Dude, I mean, I've been thinking it, and I knew you were going to say it, so I let it happen, and I'm glad I did.
Right.
Thank the Maker, a Top Gun podcast.
Well, we were inverted.
It's like this, Mike.
We were inverted.
Yeah, we were inverted.
Yeah.
So
there we go.
I got a great Polaroid of it.
Fee uses a big vacuum hose to lift her gonk droid into the ship, and this calls way back to when the Jawas lifted R2 into the Sandcrawler on A New Hope. So this vacuum...
Sick gonk droid, too.
Gonky! Yeah.
It's like a new vibe. Have we seen a gonk droid like that before?
The cylinder.
It's kind of like cylinder.
Well, I think Clink was probably the other one that was similar, which we do love ourselves, Clink the droid, for sure.
But I did notice the Jawa vacuum. Droid vacuum hose was cool.
Yep. So that's a good little throwback right there. The Venator class Star Destroyer over Pabu is reminiscent of the classic Star Destroyer. So I think on the bingo card, we're saying we're getting closer and closer to seeing that development of full visual identity into the Empire.
Oh, continue, but I didn't finish typing this whole thing here.
Oh.
I was going to say reminiscent of the Star Destroyer over Jedha City.
Ah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say also...
Just like hovering there.
Yeah, and the silhouette of it coming out from the Maw in Solo, which was epic.
They stripped all the color, right, at this point? From
great
those
movie, Solo. Great movie.
Right? We should do a rewatch, a live watch with everyone. Yes, they're not... They don't have the red markings anymore, at least from what I've seen when they show them. So I think that's the direction we're heading. Palpatine has been hunting Force-sensitive children for experimentation for a very, very long time. In the Clone Wars Season 2, Episode 3, Children of the Force, he hires Cad Bane to capture children and tells him, I need test subjects. This episode aired in 2009.
Say that again. Palpatine says, I need test subjects.
I need test subjects. Right.
He's had this in his brain for so long.
2009.
In 2009. What were you guys doing in 2009?
That was a dark, dark year for me, bro. I was struggling. I was on the struggle bus.
We were making an album that wasn't good. That's what my band was doing.
We were not a band, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I had, it was a weird time, man.
But think about this, even at these rough times you guys are describing, I was graduating from college, and once I got my my student loans, I realized I was also in a dark place, because I probably wouldn't have done that again. But we know that even despite us all being in a dark place in 2009, we still were not abducting children. And
so now it's like, did Dave Filoni go into the room with Abrams and, you know, and Lucas or whoever at the really, you know, the big story powwow and go, guys, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've been working on a thing to bring Palpatine back to life since 2009. And were they all like, okay, tell us more? I mean, obviously Lucas knew because he was involved in all of that back then.
It was the second season. It was still under his creative control.
Yeah.
Before Disney, let it be known, before Disney... All caps.
Palpatine was returning before Disney.
Yes.
But we're Disney shills. Yeah, I get it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Suck on that one, sequel haters.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's that. I mean, dude, that's huge. That's huge information. And we have talked about this all the time, not as much lately, but I think there's a lot of old episodes of this podcast, especially when we're going through the films and we talk about execution. And it's like, you agree or disagree with the execution of this plot line. But the fact that we're uncovering that, or not uncovering, because it's there. You can watch season 2, episode 3 of The Clone Wars. It's always been there to watch. But now we're connecting the dots of Palpatine's plan that was in Dave Filoni's mind and maybe also somewhat George Lucas's mind. I mean, who knows, you know, who raised their hand first and said, well, what about this? You know, but either way, that Palpatine going down the shaft in Jedi was not his end. And that was always to be. So if you don't like the execution, that's okay. That's like an album with songs on it. You don't like every song, like fine. But to just write it off because there was no plan or, you know, they didn't give you what you wanted as a fan. It's just, this is the kind of stuff that makes that so ridiculous to me because not every fan is going to take the time to decipher this stuff. That's what we're here for. And I just think this is an amazing a wire we've connected that is really important.
I mean, if you go all the way back to The Phantom Menace, I mean, we'll watch your career with great interest. He knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if he's been on the hunt for an apprentice or something else, you know what I mean? Like,
it has not the core, like, at least maybe not of the Sith as a whole, And I would need to read every novel and every comic and everything ever written to really write a thesis on this. But Palpatine, I can say with confidence, his sole mission is cheating death. That's the story he wants to tell. That's clearly watching your career, watching your young career, because I need someone to follow, you know, follow me, be my apprentice, possibly
the tragedy of
accept
Darth.
My blood to let me live on forever. I don't know. I'm just like, this has always been right in front of our faces. And so the one line by Poe Dameron that upset everyone so much, again, that's just execution.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's just, man, this is huge.
But somehow Star Wars fans forgot about Star Wars.
Imagine that.
Oh my gosh. Imagine that. So yeah, it's a good Den of Antiquities this week.
Yeah. Very cool.
That's great. Let's go to some of our... Are we going to favorites? We're doing this? Or what are you thinking?
I love you.
I know.
Smooth.
It's called broadcast professionalism. Look it up. All right. Since Nick's not here, we didn't mention Nick is on tour right now. He did...
Go see Bayside.
Go see Bayside on tour around the United States. He did... send a video with his immediate reaction and his I love you, I know, but something about the format he sent, the way he exported it, it will not upload into this StreamYard thing I'm using. So
the files are in the computer.
Oh, they're in the computer?
They're in the computer, but not in the way we want them.
Are patrons getting that then?
Patrons, I'll see if I can make it work. And
I like it.
And just post it in there or something. But speaking of patrons, let's hear from them about their favorites. Ooh, before we give ours. Yeah. So Physics Buddy Joe said, I loved the following exchange. Emery says, I don't have that kind of power. And Nala Se says, don't you?
Oh, Nala Se is like, she's dying on the vine. Like, every time she talks, I'm like, we need to get her some water.
I don't know the word, but there was one word that the S at the end of the word was so far detached from the word itself.
Right. Yes.
That I noticed it, you know.
She needs help.
I know that's what Kaminoans look like, but it's just giving E.T. on his deathbed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. In
just slow motion, pale as hell.
Just white, full, just pale white skin in the case with the little glass window.
You're killing him. You're killing him.
Yeah. That was a brutal, like, just calling out of Emery, like, oh, you don't have that kind of power? And that's funny because you just took my job and you can kind of do whatever you want if you really want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was good. Also, Omega saying to Crosshair, is that Hunter? And Crosshair just goes,
uh-huh.
Yeah. It was good. Good timing. Good delivery. Physics Buddy Joe also says, Omega tells Crosshair to focus on the bigger mission. I'm just a small part. Full role reversal. That scene right there to me where... in a way, the student becomes the master.
Right.
She's showing her maturity. Like she says, you know, she calls him little brother in previous episodes. She's older. She's learned so much from them, and she's so capable. He's come so far as a character. He's got this emotional attachment to her, and she says, she just basically flips everything they've ever said to her onto him in that moment, and he can't. It's unassailable. He can't say anything.
Right.
And she goes, it's great. TK Ryan says, Crosshair missing the pivotal shot to track Omega.
Oof.
What sacrifice does he make to save her? What's it going to come down to?
Oh, boy.
What a shot. Just blue. Just doesn't make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't even hit the backboard. Let's see. Holden McGroin. Great screen name. Seeing the Republic ships and still fear when they used to inspire hope is pretty rad. That is pretty sick. When the gunships show up, it used to be like, here comes the cavalry. And now it's like... here come the bad guys.
Run and hide.
Yeah. All that Pabu occupation is brutal, man.
I think, too, though, that this episode marks the last of any of the trailer footage we've seen.
Is there not one more shot? I'm going to have to go back and look, too, but I feel like there was a shot from the overhead view firing on the island coming down.
Okay.
In the trailer.
Very possible, or they cut it. But that big scene of like all the people running from the clone troopers in formation, mm-hmm. I was like, when's that going to happen? So I think, I don't know. I think we're very close to dark now at this point.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
I agree.
Exciting.
Mike, was your favorite quote or scene or moment?
You know, my favorite, I do have a sucker for
each child. If they're good, they'll get the sucker.
They get the sucker.
And if they're really good, they'll get ice cream later.
It does what it's told. I think in this episode, with an S, it was so underrepresentative of the Bad Batch, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But Crosshair failing yet again to, first of all, like CX, we didn't really get to talk about CX, but man, I'm like, this guy sounds like Crosshair. He shoots like Crosshair. This is wild to me because I was kind of hoping on a Cody train, but now I'm like, you know, are we Crosshair clones or what's going on here? But, you know, he sounds more like Crosshair than he's ever done. And then making that crucial shot in a brutalistic way. He just literally seems like the mirror of Crosshair at this point. And for Crosshair to miss the shot, which I think TK Ryan said was his favorite moment. There is something, I think the feeling of this made me feel like it was Empire Strikes Back, that it ended, with, you knew that there was supposed to be hope, but like you were kind of looking for it. And I think it just had that, very somber feeling of going, man, Omega seems like she knew this was her destiny. It's almost like, you know, Luke saying, I have to go find Vader. I can't run from this. It's very good. It made me feel a lot of things for sure. It felt like old Star Wars in a lot of ways. So I would say probably that moment of knowing that, Omega, did not get saved, that the plan did not work. I think is going to be incredibly crucial for Crosshair's growth and his role of
hitting my bingo card when he sacrifices himself for her.
Oh, yes, that's probably it. And also, yet again, Star Wars, you know, if you like buying toys, Star Wars is like, we don't care. We're glad that you bought the toy. If you have a Havoc Marauder sitting on your shelf, you bought the Lego, go ahead, put it right next to the Razor Crest and just smash it. Destroy it. It's gone.
Throw it off the balcony.
Throw it off the balcony. It's gone. So, you know, save it for the memory bank. Somehow the Havoc Marauder is not returned.
Ryan, how about you?
Definitely the moment where Omega opened her eyes.
Final shot.
You know, meditating or whatever that, you know.
Yeah.
Just that moment of mindfulness. I fully felt, whether I'm right or wrong, what I felt in that moment was a connection to the Force for the first time.
Dig that.
I hope so.
And I like the Force.
You like the Force too?
Yeah.
Sick. I'm with physics buddy Joe. The moment where, like we talked about a second ago, where Omega does the full role reversal with Crosshair is not just special because Crosshair gets emotional and he has this panic moment of, no, you can't do that. You can't leave. Which reminds me of one of the most like intense, ugly cry-inducing scenes I've ever witnessed in my life on television, which was when Jack told Hurley to go and Hurley said, you can't just die. Oh my God. Brutal. It made me think of that. Like the look on his little animated face was so intense. So there's that. But also just the confidence that Omega has, even though she's obviously scared. It's like you're saying, Mike, it's her destiny. It's the only way.
It's Jedi. So good. It's Jedi shit.
Yeah, man.
Like I'm going to go sacrifice myself for the greater good. She's feeling it, dude. I'm telling you, she's feeling the Force bubbling up in there.
Yep.
That's why her blood can handle the M count. It's not confirmed yet that she just can handle the M count. There still could be more.
But yeah, there was that part where Crosshair is like, when, you know, he's like, oh, you know, she goes, well, put a tracker on me. And he's like, no, they'll find that. And then the first thing that happened, you know, like set a tracker on the ship. So I thought that they were going to kind of pull the old, like, put a tracker on me so that they find it and then think, okay, cool. Now it's like hidden in her shoe or something like that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And when they didn't find, there was no other tracker. And then when he makes the shot and it misses, I was like, oh,
strike two.
See you later. Yep. So I assumed that maybe we'd see Ventress's ship following the CX, but we didn't. So
no, man. The cool part is, and I was going to mention this earlier, it sets it up for a couple things. One, they have to go to Tantus. Everyone has to go to Tantus. So to wrap this thing up, the Batch and Echo and Rex's clones and all of it, they have to make it there to rescue her, right? She's not going to break out again. They're not going to just play that thing over again. So there, she's for sure going to meet those Force-sensitive kids. There's no way that's not happening.
Sure.
So even if Omega doesn't use the Force, they're going to.
Right.
So all caps, yes, yes, yes. We're going to get that. And then they're going to liberate as many clones as possible. Maybe a bunch of them die. But regardless, the mission is to destroy that place.
Right.
And that leads us straight into this huge setback for Project Necromancer, which has to relocate somewhere else. And that somewhere else is Exegol.
Nice. And then it rips open a time-space continuum, and one of them turns into Vecna. And it all happens. It is.
And then Biff's running the whole town. He's got a casino.
Right.
Yeah. Marty's mom has fake boobs. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh my gosh. I never knew that we had to connect it until this podcast. Amazing.
Two McFlies with the same gun. That's how it ends.
Yeah, I love that.
The end forever. Yeah. Star Wars. Yeah. Credits roll.
No credits music.
And I get that bingo card.
Yep.
There it is. That's true. Nice one.
I don't know. I got to say this week, probably this would have been the one.
Yeah, I agree.
Unless it's the finale, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless they just, it's just dark, dark. Everybody's dead.
I hear a collective. I hear a collective. This sound from the Kyners right now. Like
crackles and knuckles.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Hold my beer.
Yep.
Maybe, dude. I mean, it would not surprise me if they went ahead and ran this thing into the ground, and not in a bad way. I mean, like just no, like if this series ended in an Empire Strikes Back-esque way, because there's more to this story that we know is coming later. So there's no need for this to wrap up with some happy ending. Like it just doesn't.
Right.
And.
Right.
The whole style of this show, it's dark and gritty, and their armor is dark and gritty, and now we're really in the depths of how evil the Empire truly is. Are you even going to feel good if there is like a happy Pabu? Oh, we got our boats back and everybody's happy. You know, like that's not going to feel right.
No, it can't. It can't.
Right. So it's gonna end dark, and then they're gonna go. Just a reminder, it's the 10-year anniversary of Star Wars Rebels. So go ahead and watch it all over again, because that's where the show picks up. Yeah, sure.
I'm hoping there's gonna be another series, and it's gonna be called Omega.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be about her. Or we get a series about the path.
Right.
Or there's like a Clone Rebellion series, and it follows Rex and crew and whatever Bad Batch member survives, if any, or Rex and Omega to get, like, who knows? Like,
well, official
there's something else.
Official Star Wars does say, I know we have to wrap up, but official Star Wars does say Ventress's story will be told.
Yep, there you go.
So it's kind of like, you know, and I think the voice actor equally said, I'm just getting going, I'm back, like we're doing all this. Yeah. So like there is more happening with Ventress specifically, whether it's an audiobook or something, which I don't think it's going to be. I get the idea that it's definitely going to be.
For sure. I would just say that we the one thing we have going for us when we speculate here is that we know how this chapter ends, and it doesn't end well. So it's not, there isn't a successful clone uprising. There isn't some young Omega Force user that saves the day. The Empire wins here in this chapter of the story. And so, I mean, I love that because I want to see this side of the story. It's Star Wars as a kid was the good guys win all the time. Even Empire Strikes Back. I mean, you know, at 5 years old when I was watching that, I still was just like, yay, Luke Skywalker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But overall, it's the heroes are the heroes. And in this part of the story, the heroes don't win. It's just like, we already know the ending, so it's not possible for the heroes to win here.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to think about how they're going to tell these stories in the spirit of Star Wars where the good guys win, you know?
The path. The path, the path, the path.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Grogu being hidden for 50 years?
Mm-hmm. We do know that one of those clones ends up on Dayu asking for money in his helmet.
Yeah.
Just one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that clone got away.
Also, speaking of one of those clones that ended up somewhere, again, Ryan from Screen Crush has a shaky, loose, maybe theory that Omega is Rey's mom.
Oh, geez.
Because the the timeline does line up. And if her Rey's clone dad didn't have the midichlorians, but he had the DNA, and then Omega's...
What?
You know what I'm saying? Omega's mom
I can't dismiss
had
it. I can't dismiss it. Maybe let's talk about it. This sounds interesting. Next week's
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe we'll talk about it on the after show thing. Speaking of the after show thing, because we are wrapping up, for patrons in the patron feed, we're doing a question from the Star Wars Conversation Chat Pack by Kelly Knox. Boba Fett hires Jabba the Hutt's remaining Gamorrean guards when he becomes Tatooine's new daimyo. Would you have done the same? Why or why not?
Oh, interesting.
We'll talk about that in the after show segment for patrons.
Let's do it.
If you want to hear that, patreon.com/thingtomakerpod. At any tier of patronage, even the $5 citizen tier, you can hear the ad-free extended version via Patreon. So do that. If you like our show and you want to support us and you want to help us pay bills and continue making this, we appreciate you so much, patrons, for real. Not just pandering. Truly. It makes the thing happen.
Truly.
Dudes, this was a good one. Thanks for hanging.
Can't wait to see where this is going.
Yep. It's going to be big. It's going to be heavy. I don't think Nick's going to be back before... No, he is. The finale will be when he's back, right?
I love it. We're getting the band back together right before the finale.
We're doing
it. He just texted and said he misses us dearly.
Yep, he's very upset.
Right.
So we're going to go cry about it, but we're also going to do the after-show segment for patrons. And until next week, may the Force be with you. If you enjoy Thank the Maker, you can support us by following and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or you can support us directly at patreon.com/thankthemakerpod, where you can get access to our Discord server, exclusive content, exclusive merch, our recording live stream, and more. Our patrons quite literally make Thank the Maker possible.